I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and I am thrilled to tell you about today's episode. Today, we are joined by two incredible guests, Angelina Jolie and Toccata Iron Eyes. Angelina Jolie, yes, that one, is the well-known actor, director, and humanitarian, and one of the authors of Know Your Rights and Claim Them, A Guide for Youth, a book she co-wrote with Geraldine Van Buren and Amnesty International that is all about the rights of children and how young people can learn what rights they are afforded and make changes in their communities. Toccata Iron Eyes is a Native American activist who rose to prominence for her efforts of organizing against the Dakota Access Pipeline. We talk today about the book and the ways young people have the power to affect real change. The Stacks Book Club pick for December is A Little Devil in America by Hanif Abdurraqib. We will be discussing the book on Wednesday, December 29th with Andrew T. If you want more of The Stacks, you can find bonus episodes, a Discord community, virtual book clubs, and more over on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/thestacks to join The Stacks Pack. I want to give a quick shout out to our newest members of the Stacks Pack, Yelena Cavazzini, Alair, Molly Freelich, Francesca Martinez, Lizzie Steinbach, Liana, Clara Fischel, and Lexis Ho. I really could not make the show without you and the rest of the Stacks Pack, so thank you. All right, now let's talk with Toccata Iron Eyes and Angelina Jolie. All right, you guys, I am so excited. Today, I am joined with actor, author, activist, Angelina Jolie, and youth activist, Toccata Iron Eyes. Ladies, welcome to The Stacks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I'm really excited because today we're talking about Know Your Rights and Claim Them, a guide for youth that was written by Angelina Jolie, Amnesty International, and Geraldine Van Buren. And Toccata, you're joining us to kind of speak to the actual work that young people are doing and can be doing. So it's sort of a mashup today of the author side and the activist side, which I'm very excited about. So we'll start where we always start, which is in about 30 seconds or so. Can you tell us about the book?
Oh, 30 seconds. I've never done this. The book, you know, it says authored by, but really what it is it's a toolkit, and it's a book of gathering other stories of work like Toccata's and the young activists and the people around the world, and really basing it centered on the rights of a child, which, you know, when you start to question what are the rights, how do children actually access these rights? What's actually getting in the way of these rights? And what can they do? And trying to think about children around the world and the different ways they may need to approach this lack of access. So that's what it is. And that's how it was formed.
I love. Tokata, I called you a youth activist, but I think that's dumb and pejorative. So I don't know. You're an activist. I think that I just said it because it's written down in front of me, but I feel like it's sort of silly, right? Does that annoy you a little bit at all?
I mean, I think both of the parts actually kind of like annoy me a bit, like youth and activist. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's just like, there's the part, right, where like my childhood and like my youth, you know, sort of got taken from me because of the work that I've done. Like, I really had to grow up fast in accordance to the responsibilities that were growing, you know? And then like, yeah, activist, like it never felt like, I guess, like such an occupation, you know? I guess it's just, again, like an obligation, something that was inherent. But it's also the way that everyone introduces me. So I don't want to make you feel like, you know, that's just a you thing, because it's not.
Well, I could probably be doing better. I can't be responsible for everyone else, but why don't you just tell me how you would like to be referred to? What's your dream?
I mean, honestly, just like my name. I mean, I think that's pretty basic. And then I think people can like figure it out from there. Mostly also because like I've not figured it out from there.
I love that idea that you're still figuring it out, because I think that I'm still figuring it out. I mean, I just think that's so relatable. Okay, we're going to jump back, kind of start with the book. So the frame of the book, as you mentioned, Angelina, are the rights of children that were agreed upon at the UN Convention for the Rights of Children. And one of the things that I found really interesting, and I did learn a lot reading this book, I'm sort of embarrassed to say, I thought maybe I would know more.
I learned a lot in writing it.
There's a lot. I was taking a lot of notes. But can you explain a little bit to people how children's rights are different than general human rights? Because I found that really interesting.
I probably won't say it the way in the book, I don't even remember. But what I where it's landed with me is, what any right is for, or what anybody's, you know, the base of why rights exist, is so a human being can become the full human being they should be without restriction and abuse. And so a child is in these very formative years. And so their rights are so much more important because their growth and this time is so precious and so important. And their voices are so important, and their protection is so important, because they are becoming, they're growing, and this is that formative time. And they have human rights. They are human. Within the human rights, that's the child. But the child has these other rights because they need to be considered in a special category because of the sensitivity of what it is to be growing up. And so it's not that these rights came out of, wouldn't it be nice to give them some of this, or wouldn't it be nice to give them that? The rights are, in order for a child to grow into a healthy adult, what is the base? Mm. And without this base, we know it's going to be damaging. This is what we know. We know mental health, emotional health, science, physical protection, all these things. We know that this base is there because this is the best shot of this child becoming a healthy human being, a healthy adult. And it makes sense. Everything you read, every right makes perfect sense. You read and any intelligent person says, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And so it's from that then we look through the lens of children's rights, human rights, and abuses around the world, instead of kind of picking one at a time. Oh, well, this person's being assaulted for this, or this, there's rape and conflict over here, or there's lack of land rights over here, or this child should go to school. It's not one piece of, you know, injustice at a time. It's all collected in all of this. It's asking everybody to go back to the base treatment and then look at what is being taken from children, their childhood, or the rights to their body, or their voices, or their freedoms, or their land. What is being taken, and seeing it in a more aggressive way as an assault on them. Not just that it would be nice if they had the right to play or right to, it's not nice. It's an assault on them that these things are stripped from them and removed from them, because we know it's necessary for their health.
Yeah. One of the things that I found really interesting, I mean, there's so much in there, but one of the things I found really interesting, that in the United States, they actually haven't signed on to ratify this charter, this document from the UN. Mm. Anybody have any ideas why not? Anybody have thoughts? Because I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of questions, but I'm hoping.
Tata has a lot of thoughts on that one.
Yeah, well, because people have too much stock built into the labor of young people already within the United States. And so much of it is free and is completely stolen. Like, as an activist, like, I work for free from the time that I was like 12 until around like 16.
Wow.
You know, just completely unpaid, doing several different things for various different organizations that were like very much established. And I didn't ever know that it was actually something I needed to be paid for until I started talking to other young people who were being paid for it and had been doing it and had realized that it was an industry far sooner on, you know. And also, like, I think there were just like child labor laws that were like violated in like Texas or some shit. Like they were like 14 year olds. It was like making sure that like 13 and like 14 year olds can like work later hours until mm-hmm. like 11 p.m. Like they're, it's just like people are not ready to actively admit that we've not actually made very much progress. I mean, I'm sure that not a lot of people know, at least within the US, about the UN, you know, gathering of child rights at all, or that is even an assembly that happened, or that we're violating it in any way. Like, you know, it's not actually, I don't think, out of ill intent. It's just simply out of like a mass miseducation.
Which is why it's great that this book exists.
Which is why it's awesome. Yeah.
I think too, what ends up happening is it's part of what she said, which is adults have to be willing. A lot of times when you look at why someone's rights are not given to them, it's somebody's benefiting somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really try to track it, so who benefits when children in America don't have these rights? You can force them to do more work. Maybe a parent doesn't want to give up these rights because they want to put their child at work or profit from them. Maybe I know voice in court is a very important one, right?
Right. Or like if we're talking, you know, about rights to a clean future or a future at all. And then you start talking about like as an Indigenous person, like for me, what it means to identify like as a woman and also like not to be seen as a child anymore. I mean, I know that they say that mm-hmm. like, right, that like, the UN like youth caucus stuff goes until like kind of egregiously late. Like it's like 27. Well, I don't want to say that, but like
that's funny.
It's past 18.
Yeah, it's past 18. But like legally, right? Like I can be tried as an adult now. So there's like there's at least that. And it's sort of crazy, I guess, to imagine. But as an Indigenous person, like my rights are different, you know, like again, which is why like this sort of book is so important, because it doesn't actually, it's not set up for one individual, right? It's set up so that people internationally can look at this as a guide to protests and to civil disobedience in a way that is safe, in a way that is at least assured, right? Like by going through it, that like choosing a path based on the evidence there will not bring you at least like bodily harm. The rest is up to mm-hmm. you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that like I'll go to many protests and have that choice to make myself. But yeah, and I think it's just like a good introduction. I think protest is something that sounds scary to a lot of young people because it's so villainized in the mainstream, I guess. All you really hear about is like riots. You don't think actually immediately like revolution when you think protest nowadays. You think about like burning property and different things. I mean, if you're like, I guess, an average American, I would say like that is the main concern, it seems. And to just give people like an access point to this work for themselves to realize, right, that it's not actually that anyone should be making enemies of each other, but that we have dignity and like we can protect that for ourselves no matter what age we are.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that stuck out to me about the book was it is, I mean, the subtitle says it's a guide for youth, but it really is a guide. And it's not just a guide in the way that it's like, follow these steps and you can change the world. But it's like, look at this young person who's the same age as you right now, or maybe they're doing something that interests you or something that you're passionate about. And these are the things that they did that may or may not seem extraordinary, depending on where you're coming from. But these are the things that young people did. And these are the things that young people are doing all over the world. I love that the book is inclusive of so many children and young people all over the world, because at least in my experience as an American, it becomes so American-centric. It becomes obsessed with the problems and the issues of America. But the problems and the issues are interconnected. They're global. And you can't have one without the other. So I really appreciated that as a point of inspiration as well. And just that some of the things that popped into my mind about why the U.S. wouldn't want to ratify this also had a lot to do with the police, gun control, prisons, prison abolition, and those kind of industries, healthcare, and those industries, when you talk about who's benefiting. Okay, I'm curious, Angelina, when did you start working on this project as a book? And has it changed from what you set out to write?
Well, I've been working with the UN and traveling into the field. I work with the refugee agency for about 20 years. And so, you know, you jump into this. This is why I say it's not really one issue or another. You jump into anytime you start becoming conscious of the world you live in, it's not, you may have one aspect of the injustice that really tugs at your heart, that really you become passionate about, but really you see very quickly how interconnected it all is. So working with refugees, people are displaced for all different reasons, and all peoples are displaced, and all religions and all races and all, and persecuted for different reasons and struggling with different issues within displacement. And so whether it be gender-based violence or diabetes or like everybody's dealing with something, and it's all in this kind of, we now have 84 million people displaced.
Oh my God, so many. So, and
growing. Because of the different realities that we're facing. So in looking at that and seeing always how much the children are the most affected, right? And have the, whether it's they're growing up in displacement, whether their parents are fleeing because they're being forced to be conscripted into child soldiers, or because they're going to be forced to be genitally mutilated, or because they're unable to go to school, or and all this, the ways the children are not, they are right in the center of that crossfire of so much injustice and abuse. And the most vulnerable. So that was always on my mind, and trying to figure out how it's possible. And it felt like I was going one conflict at a time, addressing the same thing over and over again, right? As if it was starting, I kept saying, why are we talking about this as if it's the first time it's happened? Mm-hmm. Or we're so shocked. We should stop being shocked. These things need to become, when we see this or we know this, it's wrong. There needs to be, you know, quicker response than 2 years of discussion about how bad it is. You know, it was driving me nuts. And then I experienced some things myself and started to learn more about children's rights in America. And I, being a UN person, pulled out the rights of a child and started to look through it until somebody explained to me that doesn't apply to your kids in the way that you think it does. And you can't
teach it to them.
Yeah, you're talking to them about it as if it's something they can touch and hold, and they can't. Mm. And I started to then really question, what does that mean? And of course, law itself, for anybody, we can all say, and a country can sign and ratify, and still the citizens, of course, because look at all the countries signed up to the UN, but look at their behaviors, or look at the, so you start to say, okay, this younger generation is more connected than ever. And they are up against a lot of people who are really trying to strip them of their rights and really trying to do this campaign of miseducation. So the best thing we can do is work with those who helped pen the rights of a child, which is Geraldine, and Fight for Children, which is Amnesty, and say, how do we strengthen the fight these kids are in? Really, we can't, you know, we want to try to do what we can as adults, but we're going to bet on them, and we're going to give them the tools, and we're going to talk to them directly because they're dealing with so much. And what's amazing to me is some people will say, well, how can certain children read about this because it has this and this in it? And you think, you're so upset about a kid reading about it, but you're not upset that the kids
went through it.
Are dealing with it.
You know, you're the, yeah. we're going to have to start talking to them about it and writing about it and putting it in front of them, because that sadly is their reality. And let's face it, deal with it. So, and then the bigger question was, if you give kids the tools, are they going to get hurt? Mm-hmm. And that was to Okada's points. Like, then it was a really interesting study in, okay, well, let's now, I'm going to sit in the position of a girl in this country. How do I tell her how to find safety, to figure out how far she is from her rights, to know what to question, then to see who her allies are, then to see how much danger she's in, she's going to start to actively fight for them. And that was a very, very, you know, sobering study, because you realize, well, over here, we might say, go to the streets, talk about this, don't put up with that. You think that is not the advice and the right way to talk to somebody in a certain country. So we would have to map it out in a way where you would have to find your way through the book to guide you individually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Tokata, I didn't ask you this, but can you speak a little bit about your journey to the work that you've been doing?
Yeah.
I think that's super interesting for folks to hear.
Sure. So I, like I said, you know, it wasn't very much like ever work to me or much of an occupation. I'm Hunkpapa and Oglala Lakota. I'm from the Standing Rock Reservation in North and South Dakota. I like had sort of grown up there, you know, in and out all my life. And we were living there when I was about 12 years old, and the Dakota Access Pipeline was proposed. And so me and a bunch of my peers, who were all like, you know, seventh graders, decided to make a film and then a petition coinciding with this like social media campaign to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. And just the video was talking about, you know, what the river meant to us, and it got seen by a good amount of people. And they actually, a lot of the young people did a physical run from Standing Rock to Washington, D.C. to hand deliver this petition. Mm. And so there was like a lot of media that picked up. And as a result, you know, like the movement in its like, I guess, highest was like 15,000 people on the ground physically opposing this pipeline for a stretch of about like 6 to 8 months, I'd say. Yeah. And it was intense. Like the population of the reservation as a whole is only 7,000. So it was like a mass growth of population. And I started doing more media work, and it was like videos and then speaking at rallies and then speaking at events and, you know, eventually more things like this. And as I learned and, you know, continued to grow as a person, it became very apparent, right, that like Dakota Access is only one pipeline project. And my parents had always been doing the work. They were part of a land buyback initiative to buy a sacred site called Peshla in the Black Hills. And I think now a lot of my work in the same way is like reflected of that generational fight. You know, like my grandfather always said that he wanted to live in the Black Hills as a sovereign nation. My father wants the same thing. And my parents, you know, are actively doing that work to try to make that a reality for us. And I carry that same thing. So again, it's not, you know, work, but it's definitely, I mean, it's a fight. It's for survival and our dignity.
Can I ask you how, I'm having a hard time with the language because I want to respect what you're saying about it not being work and you not identifying as an activist. So forgive me if my language fails me here.
No, but it's all failing us. I remember I got into many arguments about this. I was like, English is a shit language. And then somebody trying to argue me about Shakespeare. And I was like, don't talk to me about Shakespeare, dog. It was genocide, like in some situations.
Right. I want to know how being involved in these spaces and these communal activist groups with your friends, with your family for generations, I want to know how has that maybe changed your dreams for yourself and what you could imagine and maybe what possibilities has it opened up or things that you didn't think was a possibility when you were 8 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, none of this, I don't think, was probably a possibility. When I was 8 years old, I was going to probably like a predominantly white institution in a small town in North Dakota. And I remember really being insecure about everything that it meant to be who I am. Mm. And yeah, really feeling the pressure. It was just like always being the only like Native cat in your class, you know. Like, for example, my mother, there was this teacher who was obsessed with Lewis and Clark. And she wrote a play that she would have this fourth grade class perform annually. And firstly, get this, she didn't cast me as a Sakakawea. Firstly, I have a grudge. I'm the only Native student in the class and she didn't cast me. Anyway, moving on, I got cast as a grandmother. And all of these like white little kids are like dressed up in their Indian costumes for this play. And my mother made me show up in my regalia. It was, yeah, no, it changed. I mean, everything about like, I guess the act of protest has changed me in every way. And it makes me so, I mean, happy, because somebody told me once that like God was happy. and then I was just like, okay. Like, I guess we get to decide that, right? Because like the only way that something can stay in such a state of continuation is if it's happy doing it. So we have to be able to find the joy in whatever we're doing, which is why I'm adamant on not calling it work. Because if it's work, like, I need a fucking break, you know, like truly. But there's no break to be had in this. It's ongoing, and it's when I sleep, and it's when I take care of myself, and it's when I'm crying, and it's when I'm decrepit looking and not okay. But it's actually just solely in the survival of it. And in the fact that my resistance is my existence, you know, that's like a coin phrase that all the Indigenous activists know, but like, yeah, it's an excellent truth. And so just having that being a constant in my life, it is my base, and it was my recognition of my children's rights, you know, before I had any sort of vocabulary for it. It was the recognition, right, that like I had a voice inherently. The word for children in Lakota is Wakaija, which means sacred being.
It's always been there.
Yeah.
I love this. Okay, I have this other question, and I don't know that either of you are going to have the answer, but I think it's good maybe to think about. Equal rights is this sort of confusing phrase that I think about a lot, because I think it's tricky because people experience disadvantages differently and on different scales. And we want to quantify things, which we really can't. Some people are more hungry than other people. Some people have less clean water or whatever. Mm-hmm. All of these things are sort of being talked about as if they're the same, like hunger, but they're not. They're not equal. They're not equal disadvantages. It's all sort of on this sliding scale. So I'm wondering, how do we know when children's rights is being fulfilled? When we talk about this stuff, how do we know that we're doing it right or wrong, or that we've succeeded? Who's holding people accountable? Who's enforcing the rights of children to being upheld? As you mentioned earlier, Angelina, a lot of countries are signed on and they're doing horrible, horrible things to children. So is that individuals are holding countries accountable? Is the UN holding people accountable? Do they have a body that can enforce it? And how do we know if it's being enforced?
It's a really good point. I think accountability is the key. Right? You mentioned it a few times. I think that's exactly right. And I think what we've seen, unfortunately, and where we see a rise of human rights abuses or human rights sliding back, is the lack of accountability globally. When we know some people are being harmed, or there's been an injustice, and there's not been any kind of accountability or rebalancing, or no correction even. So this is where we not only, it's not just a moral problem, it's setting further back. You know, the bent towards justice is just sliding back because people are not willing to really push to hold those who commit the abuses accountable. So that would make the most significant difference, right? And whether there's a body it's all very different. And that's why when we talk about this, sometimes it's within a community or a tribe. Sometimes it's within, this state. Sometimes it's an international criminal court. Sometimes it all depends on what is happening and what can be done. You know, the bar's pretty damn low in a lot of places where there's just simply nothing in a lot of places. Right. But I think so. The important thing is not to think there's this one perfect answer of when this happens, you do this, and then this is going to make this perfect, right? But the important thing is to know what is deserved. What's deserved? Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. That's what I mean about like knowing your basic human rights, knowing what is deserved, knowing when somebody crosses something, it is a crime or it is an abuse. And there's not, we don't have to keep questioning whether it is or whether there should be accountability for it. There should be. Now you're on the path to figuring out what that's going to be and if you're going to get it on any level. But at least you are 100% sure it's wrong. And we stop having discussions of whether something is or isn't crossing a line.
Right.
Okay. I have a quick question about the title, Know Your Rights and Claim Them, A Guide for Youth. I'm wondering how that came to be.
Know Your Rights was I have a tattoo of Know Your Rights because I liked the Clash song when I was young. And so it's something that, you know, did feel a bit of a punk move. You know, what is that? It's just fighting that authority. But really it's saying, that's why it's the toolbook. It's saying, you know them, be educated in them, but claim them was what we, you know, because there's a very big difference of just being aware of something. And so it is actively saying to young people, fight.
Yeah. I also think
it's... Stand by you, fight.
Yeah, I also think it says like, right, the most important people that we need to hold accountable is actually ourselves. Like, it's like, if we can imagine, right, that like these, I mean, if we're putting it frankly, right, like the system is never going to be something that most of us can rely on, like for a future, for our safety, for anything. And so then to acknowledge that and say, listen, we need to do something about this. We cannot be complicit in this injustice. We cannot be complicit simply because that might be the easiest path taken, right? But to say that it is already gone too far, and we are the ones who actually hold the power in our numbers and also in our influence. Like, young people are the most influential people that there is. Actually, we were talking about this yesterday, just sort of like talking about what it means to be queer. I think that this generation is one of the, I mean, the gayest on record, I'd say. Just to like recognize what it means that people are claiming their identities more and more often, that people are willing to put themselves at that risk, just to recognize already their proximity from that personhood, which is most privileged, which is most recognized and given access to. Not all of us, you know, fit the mold, and rarely any of us do. So holding each other there and telling, not telling us, but making sure that we can create spaces of safety for ourselves without those institutions, without those boundaries, without those definitions at all to define ourselves, like to be that for one another.
Yeah, I think that the claiming part of it is just so empowering. To me, when I see the title, the claim, that's what pops out. That's the word, you know your rights. Yes, of course. But you need to claim them, that there's something that's actionable, something that can be done, that you can do.
Right.
It's like this invitation or something. I don't know. I love it. Okay. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated. And AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, we're back. Now we're going to talk about books and reading and writing. This is the fun part for me. So we're going to kind of do it a little different because, Tokata, you didn't technically write this book, even though your story is written in the book. So we're going to do a little back and forth. Angelina, I'll start with you. I ask every author who comes on the show this question: how do you write? Where are you? Are there snacks and beverages involved? Do you have a candle that you like? A ritual? Are you in your home? Do you go to an office? Can you just set the scene for us about how you write?
How do I write? Okay. Well, I write in the most scattered possible way because I have six kids and I write anywhere and everywhere, and I have random notebooks and things. Nobody can see this, but I have, like, you know, it's just things everywhere and I write in. So a lot of stream of consciousness whenever it comes, whenever I get 5 minutes.
And do you ever have a time where you're able to say, you know, I'm writing now, I'm going to close the door, or is it always just fits and starts?
I do, and I try. And if I have to write something, so I'll get motivated by it. So I'll read something for something like this. I would really read this. A lot of this was collecting, reading the stories of injustice, reading the stories about somebody who's fighting for their rights, reading this. So then it just gets you thinking, drop in, right? You got to drop in. Sometimes you're racing, you have 5 minutes and you just put a bunch of thoughts in. But if you can, you really try to... So I drop in by most of the things I write are about sometimes other people or other histories. So I try to really just sit with that and their stories and their voices and try to kind of join them and then right. write like I'm talking to them.
And then the last part, which I asked, but I didn't ask forcefully enough, obviously, but it's the most important thing that I ask everybody. Do you have any writing snacks or beverages?
Oh, I drink tea constantly.
Ooh, what kind?
It depends. It changes through the day. I start with green. I go into mint But I have crazy tea drawers, and my kids are always buying me gifts about tea because I just am a constant tea drawer.
Ooh, good kids.
And usually anything, my mom used, I don't think this is a writer thing. This has been ever since I was little. I'm a grazer, and I'll eat whatever I can eat without looking at it. So whether it's an apple, a sandwich, or a popcorn, anything that doesn't require full focus, I'm eating.
Yeah.
I love this. What about you, Tokata? Any snacks or beverages that are always with you?
Yeah. There, it used to be like Cheez-Its, but
my fave.
I know, but Kellogg's like actually really terrible, I've found.
Oh no.
I know. And it like broke me a little because they were my fave. But like, you know, I guess healthier options. Fresh fruit is always a go-to. I'm a big like cracker and cheese fan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking
my
language.
And there's this character, Thimbletack, from the Spiderwick Chronicles, who like is like only satiated with crackers and honey. And I have an affinity to that. Yeah, snacks are super important. Okay. Like, I'm super glad that you brought that question back. It's so true. Like, to really get into somebody's like head.
You guys are welcome back on the show anytime, because sometimes when I ask the snack question, I get a lot of eye rolls. I get a lot of people like, oh, I don't eat. I just drink water. And then I have to get in fights with them because you must be eating something.
That's really funny. Oh, that's a good fun question.
It's my favorite one. I got to ask Barack Obama one question, and that's what I asked. And he also is Team T. Thank you very much. They didn't let me ask any hard-hitting questions. They said I had to ask him something fun. So I went with signature snacks and beverages, and he drinks green tea. Okay, you sort of mentioned this earlier, but I'd love for you to go in a little deeper. How do you preserve and or tap into your creativity? Maybe it's something that's like self-care, or maybe it's some sort of discipline or rituals.
Ahead. I mean, creativity... I'm like, I've started to make music, so I do that now. It's very nice. It's super.
Are you writing? What are you doing?
I'm writing and I'm singing, and I'm like kind of, I don't play the piano, but I sit at it and I make noise at it until it sounds good, you know, and it seems to like be working efficiently enough for me to be happy with it. I'll usually even just like go and sit at the piano for a couple of hours and like acquaint myself with the instrument. I hate the idea that there has to be rules to music, and I've always found that it's best if I just figure it out myself. So that's what I'll be doing. I do a lot of like painting. Like, I have this mural in my room that's like painted on a picnic sheet, and I didn't have any paintbrushes, and like it's like kids washable paint on this like vinyl sheet. It's very strange and wonderful.
You're so cool. Creative. I'm sorry. What about you, Angelina?
My creativity. I mean, I guess I'm an artist, so I write screenplays sometimes, or I'll acting's not my favorite thing, but I do that because I've been doing that a while. But I like to write. Writing is actually my creative writing.
That's your fave.
I think so.
For now, at this moment, today.
Unless we write creative people, we just, it could be anything. It could be kids' home.
Literally everything.
It could be like some random thing we're doing in our house. I think I'm definitely not a more traditional financial based person. I like, you know, I don't have a head for numbers. I'm definitely one of more like out of the box creative, you know, types of people. So
yeah. Okay. I'm very curious about this, since we know you from film and directing and acting. What's it like writing a book? How does that differ for you from being on screen, like in your process, being collaborative? Because you did write this book with other people, which is similar to film. You're doing the work with other people, but what's it like? What's the difference? What's the process like? Were there any things that you just fell in love with writing the book versus film? Or were there things where you're like, we could be doing this better?
Tokata might be doing this in some way, but I wrote a book years ago, which was my first it was just my journals were published, my first trips into the field when I started to do refugee work. And so I kept all these journals in part because I'd get too emotional talking to people and I'd get really shy about how to talk to them or what to ask. So I kept my head kind of in a book because it was a way of being respectful, but also keeping myself contained and not crying. But those journals were published. And that so that was the first time. And then organizing that. And because I think it's for any book, it's that crossing over to sharing something. When you're a writer, you're sharing something. I'm sure you write your speeches or you do you. And so I think that's why I feel it's so so much more precious to me, because as an actor, sometimes you're saying somebody else's words or being in somebody else's right. character or somebody else's costume, right? So you're not as responsible, it's not as personal. But when you write and you share, you feel like you're really, it's your truer self. So that process, this process was very different because, as I said, this was a lot of really putting pieces together. It was more my special envoy hat. It was more my, where you're sitting around, you're saying, okay, how do you solve this for a child? Or are we covering, as to your point, are we covering all the children? Are we covering different issues? Are we ignoring this issue? What do we do about trans? What do we do about, so like, what are we, how are we addressing this? And then a lot of it was doing the work, doing the research and making sure that the right voices of the right children were being elevated with the right guides and the right, because for this, it was a real responsibility to not put forward something that could get a child hurt or put forward something that was, you know, misguided. And so this was fun in a different way, but it did feel like I went back to school. It felt like I was in school by Geraldine about like rights. And so that part was very, very different. And that responsibility is very different. So when people started to read it, especially young people, I was very nervous. Mm.
Did you get a good response from young people? Have you heard from them?
Yeah. It's meant a lot. And again, not that they like it, just it seems useful. It seems useful. Right. I mean, and so that felt really good. My kids seem to think my girls have it. They're not, you know, they like
it. Have they read it? Did they give you notes?
You know, when you realize they're that you're their mom, so they go, it's good. Like they're shocked. They said that sound like, oh my God, you did something. It's interesting.
Look at you, mom. You finally did something. I love it. Okay. Tokata, I have a question for you. Are there any people that are younger than you that are activists that are doing this sort of community engagement that are inspiring you right now where you're like, people need to know about this person who's creating a new version of the future that I'm into, that's imagining something different that you feel like we should be supporting or shouting out maybe?
Somebody younger than me.
I mean, because technically you're an adult now.
How old are you now? You're 16.
No, I'm 18.
Oh, you're 18 now.
You've crossed the threshold. Yeah. You're old.
When you said arrest, I thought, does that change?
Yeah. You're fully old. You're fully washed. Welcome to the club. Once you hit 18 to 99, you're just an old.
Yeah. People have become very, like, I guess, vulnerable with me, not vulnerable, but like open with me about the fact that like it's not getting any clearer from here. Like nobody really has the answers actually. So like
sure don't.
It's just this for some more time, I think. Mm-hmm. It'll be great. Yeah, but no, I'm no longer a child. I think my brother honestly is like really cool, which is like not like his name is Zania Iron Eyes. He made a TikTok and I didn't know about it for forever, but apparently he's like really gotten some like views and stuff on there. Like a lot. Yeah. And like, and I was like, it's really crazy. I think there was one where he posted this picture of this wanted poster for this native person named Kills in Water, who like, you know, committed some crimes, and he like made a video of this and saying that like he aspires to be like this, and it went viral, and he's super cool. He just modeled some shoes for Adidas called Shijona, which means barefoot in Dakota. He's like doing some really cool things, and I feel like we're mobbing into the world, you know, as like a family, and it's
feels super awesome and cool.
I'm gonna cry. I love my brother so much, and hearing you talk about your brothers, it's making me emotional. I'm so embarrassed.
No, it's too bad.
Shout out to your brother. We love to see it.
Shout out, Z.
Okay. For people who love this book, what are some other books you might recommend to them? Maybe books that are in conversation with or kind of dealing with the same themes. It doesn't have to be like the exact same kind of book, but just something that for folks who are vibing with this book that they might want to pick up next as they continue on their journey.
Oh, goodness.
There's so much. And it's kind of like it's your own journey to find what specifically, because, of course, everybody in this book I'm quite fond of. Vanessa Nakate, who's in the book, has written a book recently. But really, there's so many. I mean, I think that's the main, there isn't that one voice. And I think that's part of what we're trying to say with this. There isn't one voice. There isn't one specific issue, one specific right. It's about us. It's about everybody joining together and, you know, and really finding. People would say to me sometimes when I was first doing my UN work, and they'd say, well, how do you get involved? Or how do you get? And I'd say, the first thing you do is you really, really try to feel what area you're passionate about. Right? And you just try to find those voices that speak to you, and you try to find your own voice, and you try to just listen, and you try to just, and there really isn't, and definitely don't get stuck on one book, one person, one issue. Just really try to keep open.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think one person I would say is John Trudeau.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He's somebody, he's passed away since, but his words are really important. And I would like people to, many people are rediscovering him now, but I think people looking him up and listening to him.
Okay. I'm going to look him up because I don't know him.
Trudeau.
He's cool.
Tokata, do you have anybody else or any other books you want to add?
I don't know. I mean, like Angelina said, I think that it's definitely different for everyone. I think that like the two books for me that like come to mind that like I would say that I would read in tandem with this, like, as an individual, I'm reading right now Audre Lorde's biomythography called Zombie, which is super good. I'm having a really good time with it right now. Super special. Also, I read Black Elk Speaks in high school. And my dad also read it when he was 16. And like, it feels very much in the same way, like claiming our cosmology as academic material, claiming, you know, this knowledge as academic material. And also in the same way, like the Audre Lorde book, like it's sort of the blurring of lines that is occurring in all of it. And also then like the definition that's coming from knowing your rights and claiming them no matter, you know, what the situation is actually. Anyway, that's what I would.
Those are great. I love those. Okay. I have two more questions. This one is a short one, but it is the second most important question behind the snacks one. What is a word you can never spell correctly on the first try?
I struggle with restaurant.
Oh my God, Angelina. There is a debate on the show about this word because there are people who cannot spell restaurant and then everyone else. And you are in a line with some of our great minds in our time who simply cannot spell restaurant. It's like the most polarizing can't spell word on this podcast. Tokata, do you have one? Or are you a super speller?
No, I'm not a super speller. I think it's just that, like, all of them, you know?
Okay, you're in my
club.
I'm not a big,
I don't know. I feel like there's room for error in probably all of them for me. So.
Yes. 1,000%. That's exactly how I feel.
Penmanship, and some people think that it's because I'm trying to be secretive. But
it's because you can't spell.
You know, makes me cover my mistakes.
It's okay.
Oh my God, I love this. Yes, Tokata, you and I are in our own team called We Spell Everything Wrong, and we're getting fine about that.
Yeah.
I spell episode wrong a lot, which is a word that I spell constantly because I have a podcast that has episodes.
It's been a word really, really for a long time, and it just looks weird, doesn't it? It just looks right.
Yeah, for me, it's that I've started typing it wrong, but for whatever reason, whenever I type it E-P-I-S-D-O-E. Mm-hmm. I know that that's wrong, but my fingers have like gone on a mind of their own. They've betrayed me.
You've like padlocked yourself into like...
Yes, exactly. Totally screwing it up for no reason.
Okay, this is my last question for each of you. If you could have one person, dead or alive, read this book, who would you want it to be?
I mean, my mind is always just on that one kid somewhere in the middle of nowhere that doesn't have, whose family even, and lives in a house where the whole house is not educated in rights or not supporting the rights, right? Where they just really have nobody, no touchstone to the reality of how much that they're feeling or they're being oppressed by is unfair. And then to just get their hands on it somehow and start the journey of realizing what they're worth.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. In that case, then I hope that the teacher of that kid is given many copies.
Yes.
Well, that's part of what I'd like to do with the book, actually, is I keep thinking, everybody keeps saying, well, it's good to like get people to read the book or talk about it on these things. But I keep thinking, I just want to get boxes to every youth activist everywhere.
Yeah.
To kind of do that underground distribution to each other.
Yeah.
Even they were saying, well, some countries aren't going to publish it, you know, because of course some countries won't want to.
Right.
But I said, yeah, but
right.
I'm going to bet on the kids translating it themselves and somehow getting the copies out.
Yeah.
I think it's that book. It's the underground book. Mm.
Bet on the kids. Definitely. I feel like that's going to be the title of this episode, betting on the kids. It's true. We're all old. I mean, Tokata, you're young, but
we kind of focus on the under 25s. So. I still think of the under 25s as the ones that are like,
yeah, they're doing it.
It's true.
And we're old and we're just betting on the kids.
Slide into that mom role of like, we're here, we're listening, we're supporting, but we're not going to pretend that we're
right.
We're knowing
right.
Anything. You know?
And I think I should say this. I have so many listeners who are teachers, educators, and this is the book to get in the hands to the young people. If you are a teacher who does care about the rights of young people, which I hope you do, and you can be that person, that's an actionable thing that you can do, is just pass the book off to the right kids, to the kids who you think are interested or the ones who you think aren't interested, because honestly, those are probably the ones that are really interested, the ones who are acting like they don't care.
Right. The ones that are too cool for school just need to know why their feelings are justified. Okay.
Was that you?
And then they'll level with you. Yeah. Obviously. It's crazy.
I mean, I can tell it's you.
No, I only ever did school once my teachers like admitted to me that like I was never going to like it and for good reason. Like, and to admit to themselves like they didn't actually like school that much very much either. Like
American history must have been. I mean, how
can gosh.
I can't even. We could do a whole episode on just that.
We could get into it. We could get it into Miss Patsman's fourth grade play.
Miss Patsman.
Really
I would love to do an episode on the play.
What you did was wrong. Right now.
Oh my God. We like
globally. What you did was wrong.
Miss Patsman, we're coming for you next. We need a copy of the text. We're going to do a whole episode. We're going to do a book club episode on why this play is the worst ever written.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This was incredible. Thank you both so much for being here. Again, the book is called Know Your Rights and Claim Them, A Guide for Youth. You can get it wherever you get your books. If you cannot get it where you get your books, we're going to find a way to get it to you. Underground. We're going to bet on the youth. We're going to get you the book. Tokata, Angelina, thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And everyone else, we will see you in the stacks. All right, that does it for us today. Thank you all for listening, and thank you so much to Tokata and Angelina for being my guests. I'd also like to thank Joseph Papa and Gabriella Arias for making this interview possible and coordinating the many moving parts. Remember, the Stacks Book Club pick for December is A Little Devil in America by Hanif Abdurraqib, and we will discuss the book on Wednesday, December 29th with Andrew T. If you love the show and want inside access to it, head to patreon.com/thestacks to join the Stacks Pack. Please make sure you're subscribed to The Stacks wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a rating and a review. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out this website at thestackspodcast.com. Our editor is Christian Duenas. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite. And our theme music is from Tagirigis. The Stacks is created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.